afternoon. It is Wednesday, June 17th. I'm your host, Stan Jastrzebski, and this is Ask the Mayor. It's the third Wednesday of the month, so we are joined by Bloomington Mayor Mark Rezaian. Mr. Mayor, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you. Happy almost summer.
It's hard to find parking out there, huh?
You know, 10th Street has got some construction, but the main one is Jordan. There's, even on a day like today, I think there are a lot of prospective students in town, and lines are longer than I anticipated.
Before we get started, I should point out you can join our conversation in the next half hour by calling us locally at 812-855-0811 or call us toll-free from anywhere at 877-285-9348, or you can join the conversation on our website, wfiu.org/mayor. And I should point out as we start here that our story from last month about your proposal to restrict chain businesses has gotten as much or more comments on our website as any story, I think, since we've had the website. And I'd like to start, if I might, by reading a couple of those comments and then getting your reaction to them.
Okay.
One person says, the very first comment we got, in fact, says, "I think the mayor's proposal is a very bad idea. I'm all for patronizing locally owned businesses, but the decision as to which businesses can inhabit the downtown area should be made by citizens, determined by what businesses they want to patronize, not government. I don't really understand this prejudice against chains, since they all started out as some little local business which was lucky enough to become popular and grow big." Another one says, "I agree that chains and franchises are not evil, but I really do not want them on Kirkwood and the Square, which should retain its unique flavor. I really do not think it will hurt the franchisees that much, and it will prevent Kirkwood from becoming a generic McMain Street." A third person says, "The mayor is being coy and ever so disingenuous. As explained before, Cruzan has worked diligently since his election to make sure detractors of any kind, but especially those in the business community, remain muzzled and few and far between." And finally, another person says, "I think the mayor is taking the right step. He's trying to preserve our downtown, and I'm all for that. The homogenization of small-town America is real, and it's encroaching on Bloomington." So we've got people on two very different sides of this, people coming at this.
And then you've got the third one who's off on his or her own world.
So you've got people coming at this from a number of different angles. Which of these, as this has gone on, are you hearing more of as you get more comment? And you said on our last program you hadn't heard a lot of comment. We've had another intervening month. Mm-hmm. What have you heard in that time?
Well, especially since the media attention has increased. You know, I think this is one of the first kind of venues where I spoke about it at length. And there have been a lot of thoughtful comments on your site that you directed me to after the show, and I've responded to some of those personally to people. And then just recently, the Bill Strother, the Herald Times, did, I think, one of the most balanced kind of in-depth features you could do on this topic. Then, based on that article, Indianapolis media picked up on it. Now, Indianapolis media is reporting it inaccurately and saying that it's a ban of chains from downtown, which it's not. It's the proposal right now is to limit formula businesses along Kirkwood, and my proposal would be from the Sample Gates to the Beeline Trail, so just west of the square on Kirkwood, and then the streets that front the courthouse square. Answering your question directly, I've been hearing more for than against, but I have heard more from those who are concerned about it. And what I really appreciate are the people who are writing saying, you know, "I love Bloomington. I'm here because it isn't just like any place else, but I'm concerned about the policy." And I think that's an extremely valid point. The very first person that you quoted in opposition notes what most of those in opposition have noted, that let's let market forces dictate might have been prejudice against chains. And I've tried to be real clear that it's not an anti-chain message, but the simple fact is that Bloomington's economic strength comes from the unique qualities of the community. And to protect that, I think you want to preserve the community character, especially along your signature streets, the Kirkwood and the downtown square. That leaves an awful lot of real estate for chains to be located on. The other point I would make is that there is a real there is a distinct difference between a local business and a chain business, and that is that you've got chain businesses that take a much higher percentage of income, and you know people refer to income leakage, that you see that money being exported out of your community. A local business will be anywhere from 60% to 70% of the monies, payroll taxes, sales tax, all of that revenue that's brought in, the profit, and it's for the most part recirculated within the community.
What do you hear from local business owners in the last month?
Well, I think, in fact, you may be quoting from one. That last message you read sounded very much like a message I received from a local business owner who was very pleased because he's concerned about what I've referred to, and I think he also referred to, as the homogenization of downtown. The concern that as we see chains locate, you start to lose what's different about downtown, and that makes it less likely for others to come and visit locally owned businesses. The one big market shift that's occurred, and by the way, I really do agree that this is it's a very fair issue to say let the market decide. I think that makes perfect sense. I understand why people feel that. On the other hand, I think the market has been skewed by the fact that we've got anywhere from 2,000 to 2,500 IU students who now live in downtown that didn't live there just 5 years ago. We have many more hundreds coming, and that's making downtown much more attractive for chain bars, chain restaurants. And I think that's starting to change. Now, I don't think we've hit a tipping point. I don't worry that we've lost it already, our community character already. But I do think that we should get in front of the issue and not wait until we see rows and rows of chain restaurants, chain bars, and then decide, well, we better do something about this.
I want to move on to another thing that we've been talking about with other mayors on this program in the recent weeks, and that is that we've heard from Mayor Fred Armstrong in Columbus and from Greg Goodnight in Kokomo especially that as budget constraints are beginning to hit their cities, that layoffs are a very real problem and that there's something that is going to happen. Both of those two men have said they cannot avoid it. I'd like to know if that is true also in Bloomington. Are there going to be city employees, do you think, who are forced into the jobless ranks because of the budget constraints?
No. And I don't mean to be blunt about that. I guess I do mean to be blunt about that. I don't mean to be rude about that, but very, very definitely not. What you will see will be a constraining of any growth in the workforce in terms of city employees. I can tell you in the upcoming budget, and it hasn't been finalized and it hasn't been given to the city council, so I won't be very specific yet. But they know and the public knows that I committed a year ago to this community growing to 100 police officers by the end of my second term. And so that's an additional 3 police officers that will be in this upcoming 2010 budget. We are also trying to seek grant money through the stimulus package that is dedicated for public safety that would allow us to actually add 7 police officers, which would include those 3. And I don't know whether we'll be able to get that or not. But if we don't, we are committed to increasing the workforce by 3. And then I've also talked about a sustainability coordinator, much like what IU has already done. And beyond that, it's unlikely that we'll see any additional growth in what are called FTE, full-time equivalent employees. The good news is that this city has not been hit as hard. We've got pretty healthy reserves that I credit our budget people and the city council for having had the fiscal restraint and yet I think have funded an awful lot of city priorities and still have always held back from the great temptation to fund many more. I mean, there are a lot of things that we could be doing, probably some things we should be doing that we don't because we hold back on spending. So my goal in the 2010 budget is to get us back to ballpark 2008 spending level. And that's the goal I've set. Whether it's realistic or not, we'll find out in the upcoming weeks as we finalize the proposal, which I believe goes to the council – well, I know it goes mid-July. I forget the exact date. I think it's the 13th. And then for their consideration the third week of July.
So to get to the city – get the city back to those 2008 spending levels, is the city, like a lot of other businesses, not filling positions, some positions that come open and thus giving some more responsibilities to other similar jobs?
Yes. Not to anywhere near the degree that we did in 2004 when we received news of a $1 million shortfall my first year as mayor. And then we started to – we left quite a few positions open. And that does exactly what you said it does. It shifts responsibility to others. It means – and some ways, depending on what the post is, that you might have responsibilities or a service that's simply not being provided. This – we are already looking right now at delaying filling some positions in 2009 so that we build up the reserve for 2009 so that we have more funding available in 2010. It's, again, nowhere near the degree that it was in 2004. We just stopped. I mean, it was – you had to really make the case that something had to be filled, and it was almost an emergency basis. Now it's much more pick and choose, and sometimes it's not filling it. It's delaying filling it for a shorter amount of time than it is saying, well, we won't fill this for the remainder of 2009. So – and that's in part how we how I can make that commitment so easily to say we will not be laying anybody off, and that we will have – and I don't know the exact number, but we will have some level of salary increase for our existing employees in the budget. But looking at all of what we're spending in 2000 – re-looking, re-examining all that we're doing in 2009 is actually a part of preparing the 2010 budget. And the reason I say that somebody might be listening to this and saying, well, why didn't you plan ahead and not have to be re-examining now? And the answer is that we received news this year of a $1.5 million shortfall from the state, in part property tax revenue and in part pension monies. There's not been nearly as much drama or emotion in this shortfall than there was in 2004, in part because I'm a little bit more experienced now and have handled it better, in part because we have positioned ourselves since 2004 to weather a storm like this. And it really is a tribute to the way in which the budget has been handled by council, by the administration in the last 5 years, that even though we've just suffered a $1.5 million shortfall, we're simply re-examining where we are, and that we still know we'll be able to not have to lay anybody off, and we'll actually be able to pay people a bit more. And that certainly wasn't the case in 2004. In 2004, we actually not only froze positions, we gave no salary increases and until the following year. And this it's a world of difference in how we're handling this. How long we can continue to do that is the question for Bloomington. Other communities are already finding it's happening, as you I'm sure have reported, firefighters being laid off in Kokomo and other positions being eliminated elsewhere. That's in part because the property tax caps have impacted them more dramatically and in part because we've done a great job at managing money.
Well, I wanted to talk about the property taxes real quick. Mm-hmm. And you know, the state budget office has seemingly had such problems figuring out what the state's revenue would be even in the last few months. I mean, every projection is off by a different amount than the previous projection was. Some are up, some are down. Mm-hmm. How can we be sure that the property tax revenue that the city is going to get is what we're told it's going to get?
Yeah, you can't. And you make your best bet. And I can tell you that we – every time we do the projections, we are on the conservative side, and I would say increasingly conservative side. And that – and I want to make it clear to people when I say conservative, people have all different labels of definitions of those labels. When I say conservative, I don't mean that we're not funding projects as much as it is that we're anticipating on the lower side of the revenue. We always guess low on the revenue side. We always try to anticipate that we're going to receive less than what the average has been in the previous 3-year, 5-year period. But despite having done that this time, it's still $1.5 million. Well, $900,000 less in property tax, the remainder in pensions.
I guess what I'm really asking is, could that number not even be below your conservative estimates?
Yes.
And that have ramifications on things like personnel?
Yes, and it was. It was this year. It was we received less than even we had projected, and we projected on the low side. So absolutely. It's not just property tax. It's all other sources of revenue. It's our county option income tax revenue. It's the fees and fine revenue. It's monies from cigarette tax. I mean, all the revenue streams we have to estimate a year in advance. Now, the state is trying to estimate 2 years out, which you and I have talked about this months ago. It seems like forever ago, but it was just a few months ago. The Democrats proposing a one-year budget as opposed to a two-year budget. Yes, I mean the state – and of course when the state is a percent off, it's hundreds of millions of dollars. And we find that here, that even if we're – it's not, that's not the same level, but even a percent or so off results in tens of thousands of dollars, and it adds up pretty quickly. And so absolutely, that's the concern. And even though we have a pretty healthy balance in the city's account right now, that's what I'm always concerned about. And that became a topic in the last election, that the argument being, well, the city's not a bank. You shouldn't be holding on to all that money. I can only tell you that literally overnight, you find out that you're $1.5 million short, you're happy you have that money in the bank.
The same argument they're currently making about the CIB in Marion County's townships. Well, I want to get to our first phone caller. Carol is on the phone. Carol, thanks for calling in. What would you like to ask the mayor?
I have two questions, and I know it doesn't really fall under the mayor's responsibilities, but I was hoping he might be able to give me some ideas. The first has to do with sidewalks. I happen to live on the south side of the town and very close to the South Kroger on South Walnut. Mm-hmm. The sidewalk at Peppergrass goes about a quarter block short of hitting Roar Road, and Kroger has sidewalks along their street, so there's an area of about maybe a block that doesn't have sidewalks. And that keeps a lot of neighbors from being able to walk to Kroger from this area. And it's kind of, I think, because the city limit ends there and the county doesn't require sidewalks, that there's that gap. So I've tried to address that to a number of people, and I haven't really gotten any response. So I was wondering if the mayor has any ideas about that.
Well, I don't know the specific boundary there, but let me say, generally speaking, that we have a couple of ways in which sidewalks get funded. One is through the city council sidewalk fund committee, sidewalk committee, and then we have some funds that go through the Department of Public Works. I don't know how you work the phones here, but if you can kind of off air, either leave your phone number or if you can just call my office at 349-3406, we can find out about that. We can get the exact block you're talking about, find out whether it's on our agenda to get done, whether it's even in our jurisdiction. And if it's not, we can call the county and ask if there are any plans to do that.
That'd be great. I will do that. The second issue is about bicycles. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what the rule is about riding bikes on sidewalks.
It's illegal.
But I would just like to propose that be considered at some point, because I know there are a lot of sidewalks that are heavily traveled by pedestrians, and it wouldn't be safe. But there are also miles of sidewalks in Bloomington that never see a pedestrian or seldom see a pedestrian. And I know there are a lot of people my age who don't feel comfortable riding bikes on the road because of age or whatever.
Right.
So I just wish that they could maybe rethink that and say, you know, that pedestrians always have the right of way, but that, you know, in certain circumstances it would be okay for people to ride on the bike on the sidewalk, because it would be a lot safer.
I understand the point. It is illegal. I don't know when it was adopted that way. I think you probably have hit on the issue. Is that some places it would be dangerous, some places it probably isn't an issue. You know, when I look at biking on hillside, and I look and think, I would not want to compete with the cars there. I seldom do. I do see pedestrians, but not as often as I do elsewhere. I see more bicyclists than I do pedestrians on the sidewalks. I know it's illegal. In the end, I think it comes down to whenever you intermingle bicyclist and pedestrian and there's a collision, generally speaking, the pedestrian is going to lose, and that's why we try to keep them segregated. So the rules of the road are that they have to be off the sidewalk. I think the responsibility of the city is to make sure that bicyclists are safe on streets where they by law have to be, and I know for a fact that there are places in town where that's simply not the case. They aren't safe. In part, it's going to take an awful lot of retrofitting. In part, it's going to in a future. I don't think it's going to be an issue for future construction because we are a lot more progressive in our approach to accommodating bicyclists. But I don't. I certainly understand the issue. I'm not sure that we'd see the law changed, but it's a balancing act, and I appreciate the input because it's something I think probably does need to be looked at.
Well, we do have mixed use on the trails. I mean, I walk and ride bikes on Clear Creek Trail and walk dogs, and it seems to work out okay.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Carol, thanks for your call. We appreciate it.
And I will say there's a difference between sidewalks and side paths that we can get into some other time, but it's the width but you make a great point on that. On the Beeline Trail will be a mix of pedestrian and bicyclists, rollerbladers, and such.
Well, since you brought up the Beeline Trail, I was going to, but...
the king of Segway.
Yeah. So 9 days from now, the official ribbon cutting next Friday.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about what will go on there. And it's been, you know, this was going to happen a month ago, and it got delayed a little bit. And does that delay help you, hurt you in terms of your publicity for this, and you're trying to get people interested in locating businesses along this supposed economic development corridor?
I don't think it has any impact in terms of any practical impact. What it did practically allow us to do, though, was to get a lot of the construction equipment out of the way, a lot of the materials that hadn't been installed yet. We've changed out some of the pavers that were cracked or chipped and needed to be replaced, and a lot less yellow tape than there would have been. So, and some people who will be able to attend that might not have otherwise been able to have attended. We wanted to make sure to thank Congressman Baron Hill for his efforts, and now he'll be able to, unless something happens in the congressional schedule, he'll be able to attend. We really had hoped to get the governor to come, but for obvious reasons, with the special session, that's pretty unlikely.
There's important bickering to do in Indianapolis.
There's important work to be done. We are excited about it. Obviously, a lot of people have already been using it, but we want to include people who've been part of this, and there'll be local business people and groups in town that will participate in the event, as well as electeds and all. We've also seen, in this last month, that actually it's probably, I guess I said there was no practical impact. In part, it might have helped in the sense that there was a lot of media about last month, and I know that there'll be more associated with the opening. And in the intervening time, I know we've seen a couple of private businesses invest, and we just saw that. I probably don't want to do it. I'm trying to decide in my mind whether to do this, and I won't. A business I just signed an agreement yesterday. Another business is going to be planting trees, and I don't know. I think they're probably going to do an announcement. And so, for instance, a business person locally, John West, contacted the city and will be making some annual contributions to the trail to support planting of trees. And I think we'll start to see more businesses literally direct like John, directly involved with the trail. Others are already changing the way their buildings face, putting and Bunker Robertson is going to be putting kind of an outdoor deck and a patio that faces the trail. And we'll start to see new businesses locate along the trail. So I think in multiple ways we'll have a lot more community involvement in with the opening of the trail, official opening of the trail. And meanwhile, we're looking at the completion of the other phases north and south, and that's well on its way.
I want to get to one more quick phone call real quick. Thanks for calling Ask the Mayor. What would you like to ask Mayor Cruzan?
Hi, my name is Mike.
Hi.
And I'm calling in reference to a trail that was being developed by Parks and Recreation, oh, probably 10 to 15 years ago, and it was going to connect essentially Bloomington with Bedford. But at the last minute, some concerned citizens to the south of us, you know, wanted to keep the bicycle and pedestrian hoodlums off the trail.
Right.
And essentially nixed the whole thing. And, you know, and obviously the Beeline Trail is a very nice thing. But as far as something that's going to attract things like the Monon does in Indianapolis, we're going to have something a little bigger and, you know, lead to a little more adventurous bicycling or rollerblading mm-hmm. of a longer length. So anyway, I just wondered about that particular project, if it's still something that could happen. And then secondly, you know, beyond going down to Country Club Road with the Beeline Trail and, you know, up a little further past 10th Street, is there anything else that can happen with the Beeline? So I'll just listen.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you very much. Yes, that I wasn't in local government then. I was actually in the state legislature, and I believe working with Bill Hayden and the Isaac Walton League and some others, we moved some legislation. I believe it moved out of the House. And then, as you mentioned, there were some very vocal property owners who had that legislation killed in the Senate. And a lot of these over the years in the 80s, 90s, Rails to Trails programs were taken to court. And you mentioned, I don't know if you said hoodlums or what it was, that was the concern, the riffraff, whatever it was that was being talked about at the time. I hope that as we start to see the success of things like the Beeline Trail and others around not just the state but the country, that we'll see more people see that this is a benefit, can increase their property value, and we'll have less private resistance to this kind of a program. The Beeline itself will connect into other trails and will have about a 7-mile length. My dream, I think the dream of the Parks and Recreation Department and both the county and the city would be to link all city and county trails so that you can do a loop but also have the Beeline serve as sort of a spine for trails for transportation and recreation purposes throughout the county. The one you mentioned specifically, again, with the private owners, there's still that issue, but the governor, this Republican governor, a conservative Republican governor, has talked about trying to link trails from Lake Michigan all the way to the Ohio River, certainly an initiative that I strongly support. And I think you make the great point. And the more we are able to have these little parcels that we have now linked together, we'll start to have a network that's much needed. I think will serve not only as a transportation hub, but also make us much more attractive for those who want to visit the state. I think there's an entire tourism market around bicycling, rollerblading, and just makes it – I think the increased quality of life in our community makes us a great place to live but also a great place to visit.
Well, we've just about run out of time. Lastly, I want to ask, will any city business be done this afternoon during the Cubs-Sox game, or will city business grind
to
a halt?
They got rained out last night, and so all that pent-up frustration will have to somehow be weaved into the day-to-day working of the City Hall. But thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us on Ask the Mayor. For Mike Pashkash, for Daniel Robinson, I am Stan Jastrzebski. Please do join us at this time next week when we will speak with Kokomo Mayor Greg Goodnight, for whom you can leave questions by going to wfiu.org/mayor. We'll talk to you again next week.